Dun 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 dun. Join me, Logan. Dun 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 dun. Ba ba ba
ba ba ba ba ba.
We're being silly here on a Friday afternoon. We just recorded with the Sonoda team, Alan, Austin, and Lisa, about the intersection of energy, mining, and payments over the Lightning Network. Fascinating conversation. Very important to understand what's going on in the mining industry and what Sonoda is doing to really highlight that mining is helping the energy industry. And then beyond that, Bitcoin, and particularly Bitcoin flowing over the Lightning Network, can solve a massive settlement problem that exists for utilities and miners who have to pay utilities. Their solution could free up a lot of capital, which is pretty incredible. This trip was brought to you by our good friends at River. We want to do mining. Talking about mining, River makes it very easy to mine in a professional way. You go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account. You go to river.com/mining after that, and you can pick an ASIC. They have many ASICs for sale. Some are already plugged in with hosting contracts, so you can buy an ASIC and lock in a hosting contract immediately. You purchase it, you're already up and hashing and sats are streaming to your River account, whether you're an individual or a larger institution that wants to mine a lot. River is here to help you. They have a white glove professional service that'll walk you through the process, that'll get you set up. Or if you don't want them to walk you through the process, you can just go through the website, through the app, and do it without having to talk to anybody. Which I shouldn't say, I'm not certain, but maybe you do have to talk to somebody. But point is, it's a great way to mine. You're doing it the right way. So go check it out. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up an account today. ASICs are cheap. Still cheap. Still in the bear market. It's a good time. About 11 months out from the halving. So get all those sats with 6.25 block subsidy rewards while you can. river.com/TFTC. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends down the hall, Unchained. They're here to help you eliminate single points of failure in your custody model. They're building a Bitcoin financial institution the right way by leveraging Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their vault product is a 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet. It allows you to hold 2 keys and Unchained to hold 1. You eliminate single points of failure in this model. Since you hold 2 keys, you control the Bitcoin in the vault at any given point in time. But if you're ever in a pinch, Unchained is there to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum. Beyond that, they have their trading desk. If you want to buy Bitcoin and send it straight to your vault after you have it set up, Unchained's the best place to do it. You can do it all in one place. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin in bulk. You buy and it goes straight to cold storage. On top of that, they have their lending desk, their IRA, their inheritance protocol, again, all revolving around native multi-sig properties that Bitcoin has that reduces single points of failure. It is the future. Go to unchained.com. Tell them the TFTC sent you. Talk to their concierge team. They'll walk you through everything I just described. This trip is also brought to you by our good friends at CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is here to help you bring sovereignty back to your healthcare and how you pay for it. Incumbent health insurance is notoriously opaque, expensive, impersonal. CrowdHealth is the complete opposite. It's cheaper. It's transparent. And it's very personal. You get a personal health advocate once you get onboarded to CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's crowdfunded healthcare. So the way it works is you become a member, and then when you have to go to the doctor, you let CrowdHealth know, hey, I'm going to go to the doctor. They'll either help you find one or connect to your doctor that you're going to. Once you go to the doctor, you get the bill. You bring it back to CrowdHealth. They negotiate the bill lower with the doctor, and then you pay the first $500 of that bill, and the rest gets crowdfunded by the CrowdHealth community. Me and my family are on this. We've used this. It works flawlessly. And again, it's cheaper because you have metrics that you have to meet to get into the CrowdHealth community. It's a relatively healthier community of individuals. And so overall healthcare costs for the CrowdHealth community are lower. So you're paying less than you would with insurance. So if you're on COBRA, any of that stuff, consider CrowdHealth. Go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC. Sign up today and get a deal on your membership fees for the first 6 months. This show was also brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. It's a recruiting firm built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. If you're a company in the space looking to hire the best talent in the world, go get set up with Bitcoin Talent Co. They'll understand your needs, what you are looking for, what your company does. Again, it's a recruiting firm by Bitcoiners, so they understand the difference between multi-sig, mining, lightning. They actually understand Bitcoin, so you're not just spraying and praying with a random recruiter to hope that they can actually understand what you need. Bitcoin Talent Co. will understand, already does understand. Likewise, if you are talent stranded in big tech, big banking, big finance, you're a Bitcoiner looking to get into the space, set up a profile on with Bitcoin Talent Co. Go to bitcointalent.co to do all this. Tell them the TFTC sent you and enjoy this rip with the Sinoda team. Dickie.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Marty, we're excited, man. Let's jump in.
Well, we're in. Logan just ninja launched on us.
Cool. Thank you, Freaks. Logan.
Freaks, what's up? I'm joined with the Sinoda team from left to right on your screen, Alan, Austin, and Lisa. We're here to talk about the intersection of, how would you guys describe it? Bitcoin mining and the Lightning Network, energy mining, payments networks.
Yeah, I mean, We're really talking about the integration of value, Marty. We're talking about value in terms of molecules and electrons being integrated with value in terms of you know, the actual payment for them. And so there's other sort of ways to think about the value stream, but that's really what it is. So, you know, we have that first application being focused on Bitcoin mining, being focused on leveraging the Lightning Network to help Bitcoin miners, you know, pay for their expenses over the network. But the broader vision is really just that value integration for the entire energy economy.
Yeah. And it's an important one. I've said this on one of the shows I did yesterday, is I think in this bear market, the most bullish thing has been the tighter integration of mining with the energy sector. Because I would make the argument that energy is the most important sector, is the base layer of everything we do in our modern economy. And even though we're in the depths of a bear market, some people are getting a bit weary of the relative lack of volatility in price movement, the lull in price movement. There's a lot of very important building. It's a bit cliche, but it's true, that has been going on over the last 12 months, particularly in the mining and energy sector. And I think what you guys are doing just adds fuel to that fire by integrating the payments layer of Bitcoin on top of that. So I think to contextualize this conversation and to start, I think it's worthwhile to get your backgrounds, how you came to found Sinoda and why you honed in on the particular problems that you guys are looking to solve.
Yeah, perfect. You know, I'll talk about, you know, at a high level, Marty, all of us come from the energy industry. You know, we've spent our careers, in the front office, the back office, working in operations, and really throughout the value chain. And so I think it's that, you know, broad experience that helps us sort of talk about what I said earlier, which is, how do we think about how value is being moved physically versus financially, and where those disconnects lie? But I'll turn it to Alan to kind of talk a bit about his specific history, and we'll go around the horn.
Yeah, so I'm a 16-year energy vet, primarily oil and gas midstream. You know, I really started with big corporations, and worked my way to a private equity backed group more recently. But really the strength that, you know, my background is bringing is that ability to tie out the business strategy to all the pieces of the business that we're building. So I've done that on in the physical space. During the early days of the Marcellus boom, you know, there's lack of internal processes, lack of external processes from an environmental standpoint. Being able to put some more concrete processes in place, tie those out to how you develop business over time, along with doing that with a private equity backed group, right? Where you're kind of starting from zero and trying to build a business. So bringing that in-house to Sinoda, as we think about how we do that in the tech stack within the energy space.
Yeah, and Alan and I, we met when I was in grad school. So he was the industry representative who came in and was helping, you know, educate the next generation on everything Marcellus and oil and gas. So it was pretty cool.
You get that Gucci gas up in the Marcellus. No, I mean, from my experience at Great American Mining, it's funny what Bitcoin does. Like if you would have told me 10 years ago, I would have nowhere near an expert's level of knowledge on the oil and gas supply chain from upstream to midstream to downstream. Nowhere near an expert level, but like a good grasp on it. That was one thing we learned mining upstream. It was like the importance of midstream and how upstream and midstream sort of act and react to each other depending on the flows of the gas at any given point in time. That really is dependent on the price of the molecules as it goes through its boom and bust cycles.
Yeah, and I think you see that in the ecosystem a lot, right? With folks who have, you know, gotten into Bitcoin mining either personally or through, you know, the companies that they join, and they've come from spaces outside of the energy space, right? They're really getting educated on how the energy space works. And, you know, what we've all expressed that, you know, energy is the backbone of the economy. So having knowledge around how energy works is great for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, and that was one of our big theses at Great American Mining, is that Bitcoin mining, whether it be upstream or at the midstream, could create significant efficiencies for that supply chain. Like we had two theories. One was you go upstream and do the flare mitigation and essentially make the producers more efficient. But then another idea we had was actually mining at the midstream with the concept of like sucking the flare in from midstream, where you just create enough capacity at the midstream level that you could just flow all the gas without ever having the flare.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's a handful of plays there in the midstream space that we could probably, you know, riff on for a while. So, yeah.
Mario, I'll turn it to Lisa next. So one cool thing is Lisa is actually my older sister. And she's the smartest person I know. So couldn't be happier that she's part of the team.
He's good at flattering me. He doesn't feel a little nervous too, but yeah. So I spent most of my career actually doing indirect tax, and at a utility infrastructure construction company. I spent a lot of time reading contracts to make sure that they were accounting for those indirect taxes. It's a very small margin industry, and missing a sales tax can like wipe out your whole profit. And so I educated a lot of operations folks on taxes, which I think it's just made me good overall at probably talking to people about things that they're not that interested in, but are probably a necessary evil, which is a lot of what I'm doing at Sinoda too. So, you know, compliance and accounting and so all of those things that are really important as we grow in enterprise grade software, but probably less exciting than just talking about the energy and the Bitcoins.
Well, sometimes the most quote unquote boring stuff is the most exciting. Cause I think that's the one thing is with standard Bitcoin. That's something we deal with a lot interacting directly with utilities is trying to solve like the settlement of the payments for the electricity, which is what you guys are attempting to solve at Sinoda. And I think that's a good jumping off point to jump in. Like what problem do the utilities have around settling payments for their, particularly their large swaths of electricity that they're selling to individual customers, and how does Bitcoin, particularly flowing over the Lightning Network, fix this?
Yeah. So what you'll see in the energy industry, Marty, is that, you know, there is this disconnect that I've, you know, talked about it. We are a product is being delivered, whether it's molecules, electrons, but then it's not being paid for often for 30, 60, sometimes even longer, you know, period of time after that. And in one of the examples we give is imagine, you know, you drink Starbucks every day for the month of April, and you go in, they take your name down, you get your cup of coffee. And then in the middle of June, Starbucks sends you a bill for all the coffee you drank in April. You know, that is fundamentally kind of how energy works. We use the product, but then we don't pay for it. And that is, you know, one thing when we're talking about retail, you, me, Lisa and Alan, in terms of, you know, we're small size. But when you start to think about the bigger customers, the ones who consume a lot of energy, now the fact that, you know, you're waiting on payment for those services provided becomes a big issue, becomes where credit and counterparty risks start to come into play. And so what's really interesting is that when you look across the energy landscape, it used to be that there was not a better way to do it because everything was analog. But in the last 10, 15 years, all of the, or not all, but most of the physical infrastructure that's out there has become digital. And digital from, you know, point of production all the way down to point of consumption. And so now we don't need to wait on knowing what the value of energy that's been provided is, but we're still waiting on that money to be provided. And so that's where Bitcoin Lightning Network enables us to now, you know, implement a solution where the flow of value is now integrated into one process. So as energy moves, money can move. The Bitcoin miners are uniquely positioned to help, you know, bring this innovation forward because they make revenue daily in Bitcoin. And so, you know, the challenge of on-ramping isn't a challenge. The, you know, ability to now match their revenue with their costs is something that's desirable. So it sort of provides the perfect playground to get going.
Yeah. Yeah. When you consider, especially if you're a miner of material scale and you're connected to a pool and you're getting payouts daily, like you really do have that ability to settle somewhat instantly or much quicker than N30 and 60 and 45, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And so like, let's jump into like the solution. So how do you guys integrate with the utilities companies and the miners? What is the conversation like biz dev for you guys on both sides of the market, whether it be with the miners or the utilities companies?
Yeah, for sure. So first I want to kind of go back to what Austin said on the risk. So with the mining customers that are out there, you're seeing this almost like tug of war, right? In the risk space between the miner and their energy provider, right? You know, a lot of these contracts out there started as post-pay contracts, which puts the AR risk on that energy provider, right? Then you saw the bear market come with Bitcoin. You saw more of these energy providers or service providers start asking for prepayment, which shifted that risk away from the Bitcoin miner away from the energy provider to the Bitcoin miner, right? But then it added this consistent reconciliation, you know, process that has to happen to continuously true up that prepayment. And that's all because everyone's trying to settle this 30-day black box, right? There's no transparency involved, right? You just, after 30 days, you read the energy data, you make the calculation, and now you know what your bill is, right? And so what the platform is offering is the opportunity, one, to create more transparency, right? By calculating that energy bill or service provider bill on a daily basis. So it creates that transparency. And two, to settle that bill on a daily basis, which creates a neutral risk profile for both parties, right? And so now that you have this neutral risk profile for both parties, you know, what commercial onerous terms can now be stripped away in those contracts between the Bitcoin miner and the energy provider. And so it's those stripped down terms, it's the reduction in administrative burden on settling these contracts, you know, managing that data, actually managing the payments on a daily basis, right, is what's garnishing all the traction that Synoda is seeing in the market today.
And Marty, from a technical side, you know, I think the way to kind of visualize or to think about the solution to do everything that Alan just said is you have, both parties to a contract are going to get a Synoda node. And that Synoda node really embeds within it a couple of key things. It embeds the ability to make payments on the Lightning Network. It embeds integrations to the data sources as well as to on-ramps and off-ramps from BTC to USD. It embeds, you know, database structures, and it also embeds all of the contract logic between you and your counterparties. So you have all of that, you know, sitting securely in to the customer, really in their own AWS Docker that they have the exclusive access to as the customer. So we provide, you know, a non-custodial solution, a decentralized solution. Synoda does not custody customer information, does not custody customer, you know, money, anything like that. It is purely decentralized in the construction. So what's embedded in your Synoda node as a customer is really just all the information to gather the data for settlement, what your preferred payment terms decided on between you and your counterparty, and then the logic to apply that contract on whatever those payment terms are. So it's really just automating all of that in a very decentralized way, where we as a company can be hands-off. We're just providing software that really acts as agents on behalf of the respective parties' behalfs. Mm-hmm.
It sounds complicated, honestly, like when we're explaining it, because it sounds like so many pieces and so many different processes, but also the customers can also be hands-off, not just us, right? So it's a one-time setup, a really easy onboarding, just like setting up for bill pay. And then the invoices and the payments are all automated. And really all you have to do is just at the end of the month, download your report that shows like all of your payments and you're ready to just finalize your month. Like there's no manual touches throughout the whole process. So it's very user-friendly. It's very simple. You can access the data whenever you want, or you can really minimize how much you even think about the whole process. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so a couple of things here to dive into on the data side. I imagine what you're taking in, right, is the amount of electricity delivered, the price of the fuel source that is producing that electricity so you can actually get the cost. Yeah, is that it on the data side? Like from the utility to the miner, it's just those two things?
Yeah, I mean, that's typically the guts of the inputs that we see, but it's really, you know, however that contract is structured, you know, what are those settlement inputs that are needed, which is typically a meter reading, which is, you know, for the energy, the pricing, the fee structure. But there could be some other, you know, variables in there that play into the full settlement structure as far as like profit sharing or other pieces that we do automate as well.
One thing I'll add to Marty is to think about what's been interesting is some of the older contracts that we've seen are very simple in nature, like nameplate capacity and then, you know, manually updated for like, you know, the best estimate of uptime. And so why that is because, you know, a lot of sort of the set, you know, clearing and settlement processes today are still happening in Excel, or, you know, are heavily manual. So it makes it challenging to take that and scale it up to multiple customers or to scale it up in terms of contract complexity. And so I think part of what we're offering is, you know, those should not be the roadblocks to you offering a sophisticated contract to your customer. So yeah, sure. Go ahead. Use 15-minute pricing plus 15-minute energy data. You know, the software is going to take care of that in the background. And so part of the journey has been, you know, getting people comfortable with, yeah, I don't need to sort of, you know, use sort of a simple thing that I know is wrong, but it's the best that we can do in a quick, you know, in a quick way.
Yeah. No, and that was the second part of what I wanted to ask too, is like, how much time does this save, time and money, both end users, to not have to do all that manual Excel amending at the end of the month, end of the quarter, whatever it may be.
Yeah, we're thinking it saves like 10. I mean, we've run calculations and you know, talked it over with customers, and it's about 10 to 20% of your cost, like whether that be administrative or bank fees. But there's a lot of costs in the whole AR, AP system. There's, especially if there's reconciliations months later, there's a lot of cost savings when you have your cash flow expedited as a supplier. So there's a lot of cost benefits there.
Well, that's another thing too. Like what, like in terms of financing from the utilities perspective, being able to get paid instantly on a set cadence instead of having to do the two month long settlement process. What does this open it up from like a financing perspective?
Every CFO, you know, it's really funny. So I'll give two quick anecdotes from my previous two jobs. So when I worked in retail energy, you know, we had a revolving line of credit, a 5-bank syndicate that we would draw upon, you know, 6 months out of the year because cash flows were misaligned during winter and summer. And so you're drawing upon that revolving line, paying anywhere from 2 to 4%. That's a real cost that just gets passed down to the consumer, baked into your energy price. And then same thing at a utility, but in this case, my utility, we relied on the commercial paper markets. So you're borrowing from commercial paper markets 3 months out of, you know, 6 months out of the year, potentially, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5%. And then the other 6 months, you're able to lend into those markets, but you're making 1.5% on a good day. You know, so that cost of capital is very real just in terms of that cash flow perspective. But then there's also the aspect of just the cost of capital of when it's getting tied up in collateral. You know, you think if you're a Bitcoin miner and you're having to post 2-3 months of collateral, you know, Alan's been working on the ROI models there, but it's really astonishing of if you could have some of that collateral back, reinvest in your operations, how much better off financially you can be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty, that's, I mean, that's the one thing we see this at Standard too. Sometimes customers, if you want to get a lower rate, you put in a bigger deposit, it locks up more funds. And that's the big thing in the mining game, particularly, is the opportunity cost of capital deployment. And if you're forced to lock up capital for 3 to 6 months, that can really prevent you from expanding in ways you otherwise could if you had this instant settlement and this agreement mm-hmm. with the utilities where it's like, all right, we're going to set this up and just pay you instantly.
Yeah, I mean, no one likes stagnant capital, right? Stagnant capital can't get a return. And that is, you know, people want to deploy that capital. And so that is just one of the onerous terms that as we're talking with folks, leveraging our software, how do we unlock that value, you know, especially to the miners, right? Mm-hmm. To allow this industry to continue to mature and grow. So that's some of the things we've been super excited about as we're having these conversations.
Yeah. And another theory we have is that at the end of the day, mining in the long term is going to be won by those who can vertically integrate the best, the most efficiently. And at Standard, we believe, like, honestly, the people that should be mining are the utilities at the end of the day. But obviously, they're focused on energy. Not all these utilities companies get Bitcoin yet, grok Bitcoin. They love the revenue that Bitcoin miners provide, but there's still a bit of a learning curve in terms of getting them comfortable with Bitcoin, the asset, and then mining what it can do to their stack. So from your perspective, what are the conversations with these utilities been like? Are you finding any that are becoming easier and easier to orange pill, or what's the learning curve look like from your perspective?
I think Sunoda is a good adoption path. You know, I mean, if we can onboard them to use our software, they're getting closer and closer to the miners. They're understanding the actual risks of Bitcoin transactions. So we definitely view utilizing our software within the energy market as an adoption path for utilities. And we've had a lot of favorable discussions. I mean, we're definitely solving a real problem for them. They love the idea of the cash flow improvements.
Yeah, I would say Lisa is exactly right. Basically, the recognition of the problem, this being a huge problem, you know, that's across the board. Mm-hmm. And to kind of build on that adoption point, one of the things that we think is really interesting is that, you know, when we talk to utilities today, energy suppliers, et cetera, they want to receive USD. And we've yet to you know, talk with anybody who's not small, who is inclined whatsoever to really even have the conversation around Bitcoin, because they're really just focused on, hey, I like the value proposition of lower credit risk, better cash flow. But what's really cool is in our platform is that, you know, so we enable a company such as a utility to get USD today, but they have the opportunity in the platform to change that. So they can say, hey, maybe during the next bull run, maybe an innovative energy supplier says, I'd like to get 5% of my revenue in Bitcoin. So it's just slide that bar over 5%, and now 95% USD, 5% Bitcoin. So being able to provide that and make it so it's easy to dip your toes in during the next bull run or whenever the risk tolerance of the company changes, it's there, it's available, and we can make that really easy for the customers. Plus, because it's, you know, so directly connected, or because it is their core revenue, this is how companies make money, it then becomes an interesting opportunity to talk about overall treasury management strategy via the software that we're providing. So what are the what-if scenarios that you can put in front of an energy supplier to consider, what if 5%? You know, it doesn't just have to be a decision in isolation, but you can actually roll the clock forward or look backward and say, this is what that would mean to you or would have meant to you.
Yeah. And I just want to add one more nugget in there that I think is interesting in helping utilities to look at Bitcoin a little bit differently is the fact that when we are talking to these companies, we don't talk about Bitcoin. We don't talk about the price of Bitcoin, right? We talk about improving their cash flows, right? Receiving USD daily from their customers. But we do show them, hey, we are using Bitcoin technology to do that, right? So here, you know, is us talking about this utility of Bitcoin technology that they haven't really heard about yet, right? So it's helping to, you know, reframe their mind a little bit about what all Bitcoin can do.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing too. When you talk about sliding the bar to 5%, that little toe dip can turn into a little crack addiction if the Bitcoin price runs. And Bitcoiners like to talk about speculative attacking the dollar, but I think that concept works in fractals all the way down to this particular use case where if a forward-thinking utility company makes that decision to put 5, 10% of their cash flows into Bitcoin automatically via Synoda, and they hold that on their treasury, they could speculative attack their future financing cost. And once they see that work successfully once, you have to imagine it's going to be addicting and they're going to get really creative with their treasury management and their Bitcoin accumulation strategy in the long run if Bitcoin continues to do what we believe it will do, which is monetize.
Completely agree.
Yeah. And so what do you think the best strategy has been for you guys to actually get utilities engaged? Just pure cash flow.
Pure cash flow, I think.
Yeah. I mean, cash flow and credit risk. So, I mean, you know, that those are responsibilities that I had working at the utility, you know, we're managing those things. And so I think the, you know, without sort of saying, hey, there's one particular strategy, I think what we provide is we understand the energy industry. You know, that's been to our advantage is that we've been in it. We know the language. We have a really strong network. So, the, you know, getting in and having the conversation is not the hard part. I think it's really being able to show up with the right technological solution, you know, being able to check, I think a lot of the boxes that are things that we understand. So like, you know, Lisa talking about from a compliance and SOC 2 perspective, you know, these are the things that move the needle in the conversation, because if you can't satisfy, you know, what are you, a large company is looking for in terms of who they're willing to do business with, the conversation won't make much progress. What we're finding is energy companies are apt to, as you know, Alan said, you know, we talk about the technology, but they'll be happy to not, you know, talk about Bitcoin when they bring the solution to their senior management, because they don't need to. But certainly the senior management is going to say, well, do they have insurance? You know, what's their compliance record? You know, and all those things become very relevant. And so that's where I think we've been able to move the ball quite a bit.
Yeah. I think there's also like external factors that are pushing them to look into mining, which is just encouraging to look into working mm-hmm. with us, because, you know, there's renewables initiatives or other pilot programs going on with a lot of utility companies across the country. And for them to take on maybe some of those projects were a really good solution. So
yeah.
we've had them reach out to us before we reach out to them just to sort of feel out if we can help them take on different projects.
Yeah. No, again, it's the boring things that are actually the most exciting, yeah. Like being able to check the SOC 2 box. People don't really think about it, but that's something that opens a massive amount of doors if you can do that.
Yeah. And our software too, they can use it without integrating it into their network and the softwares that they're already using. So it essentially bypasses like the billing module on their ERP, which at first glance, you might be like, well, why wouldn't they want it all integrated? But the truth is that could take years. So the fact that they can just kind of plug and play with our software without having to get it infiltrated throughout the whole organization is actually a big value that we can offer.
Yeah. And so we're looking out 10 years from now, 15 years from now at scale. How do you guys think? I mean, we've talked about like the direct immediate impact this can have on utilities and miners at scale. Let's run through the hypothetical where this catches on, becomes a no-brainer to everybody. How does this change the dynamics of the energy sector, particularly on grid with utilities at scale?
Okay. So this is one I really, really enjoy, because I think it's, what's really interesting, Marty, is, you know, we've talked about smart grid for over 20 years. You know, we've talked about, you know, being very, you know, a lot more intelligence in terms of load control, generation, you know, management, things of that nature. And what we haven't really seen is a solution come to be that can ultimately deliver on a vision that was started, you know, over 20 years ago. And so what we've been talking with folks about lately is really being the product that fulfills the Department of Energy's vision for a transactive energy system. So this is really taking everything that, you know, is encompassed in a smart grid, but then alongside of it, having the integration of a decentralized energy markets. So that is really where we see things going. It's where you now are getting out of sort of a top-down centralized model, where now you have a system that is welcoming to distributed energy resources, whether of all stripes, because what you have is you have local real-time price signals, you have the peer-to-peer payments, you have everything you need to have an energy system that is very flexible, very dynamic, and where you have much more efficient markets pricing in the true cost of energy, both in terms of the molecules and electrons, but also the environmental externalities related to those. So, you know, where we're not having to sort of try to plan from the very centralized way, but now where we can have a very decentralized approach that ultimately will be efficient and drive more innovation and drive more energy abundance, you know, in the world. So that is really where we see it. We see the whole system being on the Lightning Network, every physical node having its own Lightning Network node, and there being this synchronous flow of value to all the parties on the system.
Yeah. And just, I mean, because that's been an underlying theme last few years, is the grid system in the United States, relatively centralized. And so what does empowering individual utilities companies do? I mean, you mentioned like a more decentralized grid system, but like, what could empowering individual utilities mean for the strength of the grid overall? Do you think this solves a massive problem that we have, or is that sort of unrelated in a way?
I think that, you know, what you'll find is that there's quite a bit, like, for example, you know, if you were to spend time, you know, digging into any utilities, you know, what do they know about their operations? They see where there's grid congestion. They know where the weak spots are in terms of what's creating, you know, instability, what's creating reliability challenges. The challenges is being able to price that into the cost of providing the service. And so that way they can provide that economic, or there is an economic signal to then drive investment there in an efficient way. And so what I think is fair to say is that, you know, we're sort of pushing towards a much more free market approach to the energy system, where, you know, we all know free markets are not perfect, right? There's going to be, you know, there's going to be issues where, you know, capital is slow to respond to, you know, opportunities, et cetera. But I think over the long term and for the greatest number of people, it will be a system that is more, you know, provides more power at a lower cost to the most amount of people.
Yeah.
Or energy generally, I should say. But yes.
How do we get the politicians to realize this?
You know, I think my one thing is, you know, it's great that like the Department of Energy is already on board. They're begging for somebody to deliver this solution. People realize it. I think it's, but I think it's showing them, Marty. You know, well, the good thing is energy companies are a very important, you know, a very important group within the political sphere, right? Every politician has got, you know, an energy company in their district. You know, it's very, you know, everybody gets a bill from their energy company. So when energy companies start to see that this is actually better for them, you know, we think they'll be our biggest advocates. And being that it's on the Lightning Network, it's not that you're asking, what you're seeing is you're able to create a natural network effect where the full, everybody that's in the value chain is going to be incentivized to adopt this type of payment structure. And so I think in that way, as it grows naturally, you know, people will see, hey, this is ultimately going to be better. It's going to allow energy companies that adopt early to really grow and expand.
Yeah. No, this is an affirmation of my thesis. Like, everybody talks about hyper Bitcoinization. I think hyper Bitcoinization goes through the energy sector, because once you get them locked in, again, it's the base layer of our society. And that's why I think there's an order of operations to the success of Bitcoin in the long run. And the first order is mining and energy. And I think, and it's weird because it's it's become more appreciated, but it's been very underappreciated the first 15 years, 14 odd years of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think you're just starting to see some of those corners turn a bit on, you know, the impact that Bitcoin mining is having within the positive impact that Bitcoin mining is having in the energy industry. And then, you know, as you layer on the technology and the payment flow that, you know, Sunoda's doing, you know, you can really help exacerbate, you know, those positive effects, right? And to get them to kind of open their eyes on what this decentralized market can really do, as opposed to, like, you know, trying to send energy across the country, right? Trying to pull demand more localized.
Yeah.
Marty, I'll give you one example of some, you know, I use this a lot in conversations with folks to help them, you know, really understand one of the problems today. So there's a study, I think it was, you know, 5-7 years ago done in ComEd in Chicago. So, you know, there was a broad incentive offered for people to put solar panels on the roof of their homes. And it ended up being, you know, the idea was, hey, we'll offer this incentive, you know, we'll be able to lower the cost of electricity for everybody because now we have more power coming onto the grid. But what ended up happening is that all those solar panels were concentrated in a few affluent neighborhoods. And so what ended up happening is that ComEd then had to invest more into infrastructure to resolve the grid imbalances that had been created. And so at the end of the day, and the study proved this, the cost of electricity went up for everybody, even the people the least able to pay for it. So that is just, that's exactly what's wrong, where we're putting solar panels on roofs without knowing where they're actually needed and not providing that pure signal. And so Bitcoin mining is naturally seeking that signal out because they know what it means to their overall economics. So they're driving everybody in the industry to say, yeah, we've got a big customer that knows about, you know, they knows about energy both, you know, over time and space and how much, you know, we should be thinking about, you know, arbitrage opportunities. And so it's going to spread out. You talk to people in the battery industry, battery technology is incredible. AI, you know, AI pulling power off and putting back on. But how are they getting paid for that? Well, they're not getting paid for all the services they can provide because there's no means of actually putting that, representing the true value they're creating in a way that can then actually compensate them. So it's going to hold back technology across the landscape if we can't sort of think like Bitcoin miners and truly drive that economic value down in a very granular way.
Yeah, the energy pirates of the world, the Bitcoin miners are. It's funny. It's crazy how maligned we are as miners. But it, I mean, it's not surprising. People are very reactive to things they don't understand, and people really don't understand Bitcoin, let alone Bitcoin mining. They just see energy usage and freak out.
Right. As Alan said, though, we're noticing it's the conversation is turning. You know, people are willing to listen. They're willing to kind of hear this out. They may not fully appreciate the value of Bitcoin per se, but they are starting to not just dismiss the topic.
Yeah. There's a lot of energy folks coming to the meetup. A lot. Mm-hmm. They're open to the education at the very least. Yeah.
Well, that's great to see. I mean, you had to imagine too, particularly for the utilities. So our strategy at Standard is to, we operate mainly in the TVA. And so we look for rural areas with falling populations that had manufacturing capacity leave the area at some point in the last couple decades. And there's just these massive substations with a ton of underutilized capacity. And what we've seen is that the utilities companies love us because we come in and buy a big swath of power, which helps them stay true to their mandate, which is like, hey, let's keep prices low for residential consumers. And so that's the thing, the energy pirates going out to these rural areas and finding this arbitrage opportunity. We've seen it as well. And we do definitely think people are beginning to turn a corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's great to see. And I think that the innovations are going, they're going to spread, you know, through us and through what other people are doing, you know, in this space, they're going to spread to other aspects of the industry. Because Bitcoin miners aren't stopping. It's just, you know, it is a relentless, you know, relentless crew. And they have all the reasons to keep pushing this technology forward. Yeah.
So what are some of the biggest surprises you have encountered building this out on the software side, on the biz dev side that you really didn't expect would have stuck out to you guys?
I'll say one is, you know, we are building the software out in a decentralized way. Right. So that it's true to, you know, Bitcoin ethos, which is very exciting. But it just also changes your mindset, right, on you as the technology company, on how you manage a decentralized platform versus a centralized platform. Mm-hmm. So that's been, you know, a fun and exciting learning curve, you know, at Synoda, and one, you know, definitely a flag we want to continue to bear forward because we think decentralized software is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And, how did you guys get into Bitcoin? What was the switch that went off for all of you?
So for me personally, I'm a skin in the game kind of person. So it was early 2018 is when I, you know, bought Bitcoin for the first time. And I told people, I need to have some skin in the game to really understand and dig into this technology. I was, you know, working closely with our energy traders. And so when, you know, the 2017 run up and ICO boom and all that stuff, that was my first exposure. And then of course, you know, the rest is history in terms of, okay, started the DCA in 18. And then it was for me personally learning about Bitcoin mining in early 2021. You know, being in energy, I'd somehow missed it all along the way. But then when I started to see it, that it was that realization that, hey, Bitcoin mining is doing all the things that everybody else in the energy industry is only talking about. They're just doing it. And so that was what just said, I've got to learn about this. And, you know, was orange pilled. Fortunately, I went down to Bitcoin Miami 2021. You know, I was still working for the utility. I was wearing a suit and a tie. And you know, it was just eye opening. But the best thing was, is like the, you know, Greg Foss, Jimmy Song, you know, the EBEX team, like everybody that I encountered and got to spend time with, you know, just sort of opened my world up to the community of Bitcoin, but also just sort of what really attracted me were the economic incentives. So from that point forward, I was orange pilled and knew that the path involved Bitcoin, you know, one way or another. But I'll let these guys say their stories too.
Go for this.
All right. Well, I would say Austin has been talking about Bitcoin forever, so I diversified my investments, but definitely more struck by lightning, you could say. I think when we started talking, you know, when we started formulating this company and just seeing what Lightning Network offered, like how it brought utility to Bitcoin and what it would enable, you know, cross-border and just how it would change payments, I think was just really exciting. For a while, I thought Bitcoin was interesting and you can see the utility, but you don't really see how it translates very well to your day-to-day life until I really started to understand the Lightning Network. And I will say now, working with three amazing developers in that space and just being educated literally every single day about the technology and the ethos and just all the great benefits. I can't count how many times I've complained about something in like the compliance or regulatory or banking world, and they've been like, that's why Bitcoin. And now I'm saying it to people all the time. So yeah, it's been a more of a process for me, but it's, yeah, I mean, the utility just continues to exponentially grow, I think. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, and I'd say mine was a gradual process too. It started about 6 years ago when a friend of mine asked me to buy into, 20% worth of a miner. And I was like, I have no clue what that is, but I'll do it. So I, you know, I was 1/5 owner of a miner, and he, you know, he installed it in his basement, and then he quickly called me and said his wife was complaining about the noise. So yeah, I Googled, you know, how do you manage, you know, noise abatement, and quickly went out, bought a cooler and some flexible exhaust, you know, cut holes on each side and, you know, built out a nice system for him in his basement. And then just kind of watched that over time, and then just started noticing, you know, all the, you know, true Bitcoin mining companies out there and how they were attacking, you know, this abandoned energy issue. And then also just kind of seeing it, you know, in my oil and gas side of the business, you know, how it could play in. So that really started to get me excited about how Bitcoin can really positively impact energy. And then, as you know, talking with Austin and Lisa over time of like, well, let's go beyond that. Let's jump into what the technology can do on the payment side as well for the energy space. And I think that's where things, you know, really started snowballing.
Yeah. And as it pertains to mining, I think over the last 3 years, particularly after the China ban and the migration, like mining for the first 10, 12 years of Bitcoin was very Wild West. Not a lot of professionals. I mean, a lot of wildcatters, if you will, taking advantage of an incredible opportunity. But there's been, and I'm trying to be careful of my words here because I don't want it to be taken the wrong way, but there has been somewhat of like a professionalization of the industry from the hardware, the ASIC manufacturers, the farm management system, the firmware, products like Sonoda coming to market. Like, it does seem like we're hitting an inflection point where the mining industry is maturing and becoming more palatable to the incumbent industries, whether it be energy, utilities, payments. And I think the mining industry is garnering more respect than it had in the past, because for the longest time, it was just like, oh, there's just a bunch of people over in China and in their basements mining this weird digital currency.
Yeah, and I, you know, just to kind of reiterate what you said and what we were saying earlier, I mean, we say that all the time. We think this industry is really maturing. Sonoda is here to help mature the industry, and that is what's turning the corner on some of these conversations with these large energy companies, right? Bitcoin mining is not just a hobby. Bitcoin mining is a true industry with positive impacts. And the technology, you know, is just scratching the surface on what you can do with it.
Yeah. And that actually just stoked a thought, particularly what you guys are doing at Sonoda. And that's one thing miners have to deal with is risk management. We talked about the way you guys can help prevent the capital lockup that happens with prepayments, but then it comes to like hedging strategies too. Like, what does being able to integrate a product like Sonoda into a mining operation do for a miner's ability to properly hedge risk within the market, whether it be the price of Bitcoin, the price of energy, hash rate at any given point in time?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we'll say that, you know, overall, that the view that we take is we are one piece of that risk management strategy. And so specifically, you know, what are the reasons why you as a miner would want to hedge? Certainly over the short term, if you're in a position where you're having to liquidate, you know, or exchange some of your BTC revenue into the local fiat to cover, you know, local fiat expenses, you know, you're exposed to FX risk, right? So if you could do that conversion every day, you could wait till the end of 30 days, but either way, there's some FX there. So part of the way that our solution works is, you know, as revenue is, you know, being paid out from the pool, you know, we can, you know, automate then the payment of those expenses as soon as possible. And so the amount of FX exposure is greatly minimized. So that's, you know, one way in which you're sort of reducing the need to sort of manage the risk on that front. Certainly as we think about hedging and, you know, hash contracts, you know, what we see as an opportunity is to be, again, part of that equation, because it still is requiring there, you know, there's margining, there's settlement of the, you know, of those contracts. These are all things that can be tied together into one solution. You know, why are we going to have one way to pay for physical energy, another way to pay for, you know, derivative, you know, hash derivatives, et cetera. The more that we of the value exchange that can happen on the Lightning Network, the better the network's going to become, the more the network's going to grow. And so, you know, that informs how we're building our solution, because we talk a lot about physical energy settlement, but when we actually sort of take that piece away, what we've essentially built is a decentralized settlement platform. You know, it's smart contracts on Lightning, but better than smart contracts as in the, you know, the popular way in which they're known, because on Lightning, they're fully decentralized. They're cheaper, faster, and more secure. So you can take any type of contract, whether it's for hash price or it's, you know, paying an employee or it's, you know, the rent on your building, and you can use our software to do it. So we're having those conversations. We want to be, you know, in that mix of how do we start to sell everything? And then you can create more of that, you know, flows in multiple directions, where then you're able to balance out channels more naturally, and make the network overall more efficient.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. Now my mind's running too, because that's another trend, smaller trend, but something that's developing, something we did at Cathedra this cycle, particularly with older models of miners that we have in our fleet is underclocking. And so that's another aspect of the relationship between a Bitcoin miner and the utility company. It's like working into the contract, the ability to take on less energy when you can increase your margins by underclocking. And I think that's going to be a very important ongoing discussion between miners and utility companies, is like saying, hey, I want to be a long-term customer, but I need to be able to work in the ability to consume less energy at particular times when hash rate is in one place, price is another, and I need to increase my profit margins. It's not really a question. It's just a comment that,
yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that, I mean, that's what we're after here, Sim, is to help to be a facilitator with the software, right? You know, that's another maturation of this industry, just what you said. And we, as you know, Sunnova want to help support that with our software, by effectuating those types of transactions, or, you know, producing the data that helps people make those decisions, you know, better, more real time. So that, you know, that's another, you know, exciting thing about it.
Yeah. Cause you know, when you're bringing that to, probably the first thing they're going to say is, well, you got to talk to the people in settlements. How are they going to, you know, integrate this into what they're doing? You know, once you clear the operational hurdle, which, you know, that's probably the easier one. It's the back office. How are they going to settle this? That's where you usually get tripped up. So when you can have a solution that says, listen, any granularity, any way, you know, we can build this, we can get the payment done, and we can settle this out, cash in the door. Okay. You know, you just sort of, accountants are our best friend right now, Marty. That is absolutely the case. They're usually our second conversation when talking to a company, but when you are able to communicate that, hey, there's no more liability on your balance sheet, you simply get receipts. Just like, you know, back to the Starbucks example at the beginning, if you are paying every time you go into a merchant, you just get a receipt. You don't first get an invoice. They don't record that as a liability on their balance sheet. And then you finally pay it and they update their balance sheet. It's just, I paid, I got a receipt. If we can make energy that way, then everything that is occurring in the back office becomes orders of magnitude simpler.
Mm-hmm. Again, the most boring things open up the most exciting opportunities.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true.
And daily, you know, I mean, that's what's crazy too, like faster settlement, but less work. And so like seeing all of those, like seeing the benefits of like the margin benefits on a daily basis is, I think, opens up a lot of interesting discussions.
Yeah. And I'm just going to overemphasize what you two said there, is that when we say daily payments to folks, they go, whoa, you know, right? Sounds like a lot, but it is less work, right? So, I mean, because there is no invoicing process. It is truly a receipt process where you just download that data at the end of the month and you know exactly what you got paid and how much you invoiced. So it is truly less work. It just, when you first say it, it sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it sounds almost too good to be true. But and I know you mentioned it earlier, but I think it's really important to stress, like, the capital efficiencies that are gained through this process should not be understated. Like, think about the types of innovation that can begin to happen because all this capital is freed up to be allocated in areas that desperately need it.
Yeah. On both sides, you know, that's how much friction is in the system, that our software isn't like, oh, one person ends up better than the other. Both sides, they're freeing up capital and they're seeing the benefit.
Yeah.
And I'll take us on a related tangent. The thing that, one of the things that we have as a team spent time on, we're passionate about, is the unrealized economic value in emerging markets. You know, capital from, you know, private capital from developed markets is largely not making its way to increasing energy access in emerging markets, you know, raising up, you know, the standard of living and helping economic prosperity. When you look who's making those investments today, it's nonprofits, it's governments, it's local utilities. And the reason, one of the reasons, is that it's difficult to, you know, take capital into those locations, but also then to bring it out. So if you are investing, how are you going to get a return when you lack the assurance on payment? You know, that's something that, you know, Bitcoin Lightning Network completely open up is, well, now it's very simple for somebody in Africa or in South America or wherever they may be, to be able to pay their energy bill or pay for the infrastructure they're using directly to somebody in the US or in Europe or wherever the investment came from. So you're sort of unlocking capital flow, not only in sort of the US or in sort of in these, you know, contractual relationships that we're contemplating here, but it's truly at a global scale, we can start to think about the energy economy now being completely free and open. So that way we can realize economic value or maximize the economic value for the investments we're making.
Yeah. That just reminds me of Ross Stevens' shareholder letter when he first announced NYDIG and Nick Carter's explanation of like the global energy markets being this flat service with holes in it, and Bitcoin miners just like fill in those holes and level it out. Like, do you guys think we could truly have an extremely almost optimally efficient energy system globally via Bitcoin mining?
It's always government.
Yeah, if only the government would get out of there.
Another question, like Austin said earlier, markets aren't always, truly 100% efficient, but definitely we can make them more efficient, right? And not just within their own borders, outside their borders as well, right? Mm-hmm. To truly interact borderless more often than they do today. So there's definitely a pathway to improvement. Where that ends, we don't know. But we are, definitely one of the folks that want to, take that on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of throw out another Marty idea that I've had. I'm looking to bounce this idea off people because I need to know if it's crazy or if it makes sense. But I've had this idea for the longest time that there should be Bitcoin mining permanent funds, like bringing the government into the conversation. I think the more we can strengthen local communities, local municipalities, state at the state level, I think the better off we'll all be in the long run. I've always had this idea that there should be Bitcoin mining permanent funds with either state or a city government either issues a municipal bond or raises cash in some way to invest in a mining operation, partners with a private mining operator. They get the cash, they get the machines, the operator operates, builds the infrastructure, plugs it all in, and they get to participate in the profit share. But then you pay off the muni bond plus the interest to those bondholders. And then after that, the mining revenues just roll into this mining fund that you can use as a local municipality or a state to fund your operations, whether that be roads, schools, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Am I crazy?
I don't think there's any crazy ideas. I think, everything sort of meets the test when you go to implement. But I would say that, what's interesting about this is that, government has, at all levels has always made investments into infrastructure and particularly into energy infrastructure. So as we're talking here today, Bitcoin mining is increasingly a fundamental part of the future of the energy system. And so it's not crazy to me to think that a government would want to do that, but then as well to think about how are we going to serve people who are underbanked? How are we going to, provide recurring sort of, as you say, like things that are long-term investments in communities. So I think we've always been intrigued by that concept, to think about how Bitcoin can be an enabler, for communities, can be, the basis for community banks and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So it's in the future. What's the ultimate way to get there? I'm not 100% sure, but I would agree with you that when you think about this becoming a long-term asset and a benefit to communities, I would certainly want to live in a community that sees it that way.
Yeah. No, we're seeing it. It's not like we're streaming sats to individuals in the towns that we go into in Tennessee and Kentucky, but if we're able to help them get a lower monthly bill for the electricity, that opens up capital for them to do other things, whether that be start their own business or simply to subsist without having to fight inflation. If we can solve the energy inflation problem, mm-hmm. for them by helping to keep their rates lower, like I think that's extremely beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Lisa said in the beginning, 10 to 20% of, a lot of folks' bills that they get at home is just due to financial friction, right, within the current fiat system and the way the funds flow, right, through the daisy chain. And, you know, here's an opportunity to leverage the technology to go to more of a peer-to-peer style, leverage Lightning Network, which is, you know, cheaper, faster, more secure, you know, to make energy payments to drive those bills down 10 to 20% over time. And thus, like you said, releases capital back to everyone's wallet, mm-hmm. right? And that's what we're after.
Yeah. Yeah. And so building on Lightning, obviously it's a very powerful technology, but what are some of the hiccups, if any, that you've run into? What do you, as a team that's really closely integrated with the Lightning Network, what are some things that you'd either like to see or have seen?
Well, Marty, we will not, you know, do this answer nearly the justice the, you know, yeah. the engineers in our team would, because they are the ones, you know, on the front lines, you know, facing these challenges. So it gives me just an opportunity to highlight the incredible engineers, you know, Alan, Max, and Colin. They are so smart, and in what's just to, a little bit of praise, like they're so smart, not just in the engineering side, but on the economic side. Like they are students of Bitcoin. That they're mm-hmm. constantly educating us. And you asked the question earlier, just like what surprised you? I think that's been the depth of which the Bitcoin ethos can go and how they can then influence every decision you make and lower your time preference as a company. Our engineers from the get-go were thinking longer term than what we had been trained in the corporate world. And so they've pushed us longer term, lower time preference thinking, and we love it. Now, to answer your question specifically, you know, Lightning is absolutely a challenge. I mean, I would say most of what we're doing are things that, you know, either haven't been done before or just the solutions for them haven't matured yet. And so, yeah, there's a lot of research, a lot of exploration. But I think the cool thing is there's also a lot of excitement about when you're doing something that, you know, whether it's something small or big that somebody has not talked about or done yet or built a company doing. So I would say, you know, it's a very high level answer. Of course, you know, we have the same challenges with, you know, liquidity. You know, that's going to always be a thing. Of course, we have to think about, you know, how we're, you know, staging, you know, or how, you know, the software is interacting, you know, with the broader Lightning Network. You know, when you and I first met back in November, you know, said, hey, right now we're building in an intranet way. So like we had a closed solution because, you know, we were still uncertain about how we would interact with sort of quote the Lightning Network. You know, since that time, you know, we've gotten to the place where now we are in the network and we're loving it. But it took a while before we were able to feel comfortable that was going to be the optimal way forward for us as a business. And so, yeah, just some things that, you know, we're learning along the way. Lisa could talk a whole lot about, you know, how do you actually build, you know, an accounting system from what's happening on Lightning?
Yeah, there's a long way to go to make it, you know, B2B friendly, probably. We've done a great job of pulling off the data necessary, but it's been hard to track, like, the fees, and they're low, but they're variable. And just some other, you know, there's just some other aspects to it that just, yeah, they're just not built out yet, that it's very much like a consumer, maybe point of sale network at this point. And we're trying to build up, at least, you know, as part of our solution, to make it more B2B friendly. And that's adding on like a lot of solutions, but it's also taking a lot of collaboration, which has been really cool. Like working with a lot of the other people that are, you know, very involved in the Lightning Network to build out, you know, full solutions.
Yeah, no, I know this problem very well due to podcasting 2.0, where I get anywhere from 1 to like 300 Satoshi streamed to me every minute of every day, and just the accounting headache that comes from that. It's like, oh my God, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, right. And then like when you're sending and receiving at the same time, and we are mixing a little bit of on-chain and Lightning. So there's just a whole variety of transactions happening at once. And it's easy to pull some of them off accounting wise, and then other ones you have to dig a little deeper. And so, yeah. We're learning.
I think, you know, maybe Marty, one of the things to highlight is the biggest opportunity that's in front of us as well. So if you think about it, you know, a Bitcoin miner today is, you know, if they're either, they have USD that they're paying their expenses with, or they're converting some of their Bitcoin into USD, and then, you know, on an exchange, Coinbase, Kraken, you name it, and then wiring or ACHing the funds over to their counterparty. So what our software is doing is it's getting a miner off of zero. So now they're doing one transaction on the network. So it's building, growing and scaling the network. We're bringing liquidity on. But by and large, because the energy suppliers and the hosting companies that we're working with today, they want to receive USD. Well, so it gets on the network and then it gets off the network. So one of the a challenge, but really I'll frame it as an opportunity, is how do we now get transaction 2, 3, and 4 to occur on the network? You know, that's really where this gets really interesting, because we were getting miners off of zero. They're now on one. And so I think that's where we're really excited to hear ideas, to talk to people in other industries or tangential industries that can sort of have reason or cause to push the funds back in a different direction. And so now how do you start to build that circular economy, start to build that network effect?
Yeah. Now, very exciting problems to be tackling. It's there's never a boring day in this industry, that's for sure.
No, that is for sure.
Yeah, that's been the best part about starting this company. Yeah. Every day is exciting.
Every day is exciting. No day is the same.
No.
Well, thank you guys for building what you build. I think it's very important. Again, going back to the maturation, the continued maturation of the industry, this is always something that I think many people believe is necessary if we're going to take that next step towards fully integrating Bitcoin and bringing that circular economy you just mentioned forward. And again, I've said this before, and I do truly believe it. I believe we have a moral imperative to get these tools to market when you juxtapose what we're building with the incumbent financial monetary system and the precarious situation that it finds itself in. And so, yeah, I think the work that we're all doing collectively is virtuous. And what you guys are doing particularly is pushing the edges out further, which is extremely important.
Yeah, we appreciate that. We agree. You know, it definitely is the most exciting thing, is to really think about how do you cross that chasm to bring enterprises onto Lightning. And we're excited by the work that other folks are doing in this space, because it's reinforcing to the direction that we're going. When we see, you know, big companies taking interest in this space, you know, it helps us then to kind of point to what's happening out in the landscape. So I would say, you know, it's small, but really big impacts already being had. And we're just excited to do our part. So thank you very much for this opportunity to come in and talk about what we're doing, because we feel very fortunate and blessed to be in this industry, having come from where we were to where we are now. I don't know if we could be any happier than we are today. Yeah. It's amazing.
No, and you guys are emblematic of a trend that many Bitcoiners have predicted, which is smart minds from industries coming to Bitcoin, like being drawn to the light of Bitcoin and then incorporating it. That's, I think, another thing that this bear market has really highlighted, is the trend of people ditching big tech, big finance, banking, energy, to come into Bitcoin and then bridge the worlds of Bitcoin with those industries, which is, mm-hmm. again, really important.
Yeah, we couldn't agree more. And it's helpful to know how to make those bridges, because,
very helpful.
You know, to Lisa's point on fees as an example, you know, you still need to figure out, you have to track them all. Like, companies, even though they're small, like it's required that they know what they're paying, you know, their expenses towards. And so we can't just write off a few Satoshis. No, they've got to be tracked. They've got to be accounted for.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we agree with you.
And so before we wrap up here, let's get some final thoughts for the freaks. What are some things on top of your mind, maybe we haven't touched on yet, that you think anybody listening to this should be aware of or paying attention to?
I'll start. I think, you know, recently went down to MicroStrategy and presented down there. And I think, you know, first observation being, you know, what a great event, because, you know, here you had industry leaders from, you know, who weren't sort of there for Bitcoin, but showed up to the Bitcoin presentations and were extremely engaged the entire time there. But really the key message is one that sort of has been a theme through this conversation, has been that an abundant future begins with energy. And so we really I think what unites us, and we hope that people see, is that the real future that we can build is an abundant one. And with the technology that Bitcoin brings from mining up through what, you know, Sunoda is building, it really is about saying energy is abundant in the full scope of things. It's just a matter of fixing the underlying issues, the economic incentives, et cetera, to really make it affordable and available to everybody on the planet. We absolutely think as a company that that is possible. And we absolutely think that what the technology we're building is key to enabling that future. So we just really want people to be extremely excited for the future, to not be afraid of thinking, you know, energy scarcity is the boogeyman. It's not true. We can solve these problems if we continue to push innovation forward. So that would be my closing thought, is just extreme passion around energy abundance.
Yeah. I don't know if I can top that one. We all share that passion for sure. Yeah.
I'll also say, hey, local meetups are unbelievable. Us being at our local meetup as just passionate Bitcoiners that led to us being passionate Bitcoiners with engineering friends. And so that's really key.
Yeah, the Bitcoin third places are important. It's much more productive discourse in person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, Alan, unless you have anything to add.
Do you have anything?
Yeah, I really think it's back to that ecosystem that, you know, you mentioned, Austin kind of hinted on. You're really seeing this ecosystem grow. And when I say ecosystem, I mean all of the technology, the mining industry, the maturation of it, but also the other technology that's coming to bear, the new companies that are entering the space. And as you put it well, pushing the boundaries out a little more, right? You take a look at, you know, the price of Bitcoin over time, right? Up and to the right, you know, hash rate up and to the right. But if you go and look at the ecosystem, the amount of money, fiat money coming in to invest in this technology into the space, the number of companies that are being built, I think that's also going up and to the right. And so that's got to be exciting for everyone. And as we are pushing our boundary, like Austin said, we are very supportive to see other folks find their piece of the puzzle to go out and, you know, push their boundary wherever that is. And let's watch this ecosystem grow together.
Yeah, there's a lot to do. That's the other thing. It's never boring. I don't think it's not going to be boring. I don't think it's not going to be boring for at least a decade, potentially more.
I would say not. And so, Marty, we are an open book. You know, we want people to reach out to us if they have ideas. We are Grow the Pie type people. So, you know, hopefully anybody listening, you know, feels comfortable. If they have questions, they want to work with us, you know, reach out.
Let's do it. Utilities companies. Let's go.
Let's go. You know, the first one that jumps on and they're receiving their cash 2 months before they have to send it out, everyone else is going to be quick followers afterwards because they're going to be in such a great cash position.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We just need that first utility company going to the industry cocktail party. Like, oh, you're waiting 2 months?
Yeah. Exactly.
It's going to come.
Flexing all their cash flow, saying, hey, life is good.
Life is good.
And hopefully
their
treasury as well.
Yeah. Well, Alan, Austin, Lisa, thank you so much for your time today. Friday afternoon. This is a great way to end the week for me.
Yeah, we really appreciate
likewise.
This.
Yeah, we were really excited to talk with you, Marty. So thanks for the time.
No, thank you guys. Keep crushing it. I'm sure this will be the first of many conversations as the industry matures, as you guys mature as a company, and as Bitcoin continues to take over the world. So this is not a goodbye. It's a see you later. And a thank you for your time this afternoon.
All right. See you soon, Marty.
See you later.
Everyone, take care.
That's all we got today, freaks. Peace and love. Okay.